Every startup begins with an ambitious founder and an idea, but what inspires them to take the leap into the entrepreneurial world? I'm Peter Jun Ho Sang, founder and CEO of Beyond Form, and welcome to our new founder series. I'll be sitting down with a few of our startup founders to hear about their journey as entrepreneurs in the fashion tech world. On today's episode, I'm sitting down with Suresh Raza, founder of Bisbee, to talk about her personal journey of entrepreneurship. Pakistan is not known for entrepreneurship. For Suresh, the idea of building a startup didn't come onto her radar until she was well into her university years and actually thought her career would take a more traditional corporate path. That all changed when Suresh spotted a huge untapped opportunity in the Pakistani pre-loved fashion market. So she founded Bisbee, a resale platform with now over 45,000 users and thousands of pre-loved garments. With her success so far, Suresh has proven countless doubters wrong as a solo female founder.
I became the second solo female founder in Pakistan to have raised money. And that in itself was such a big feeling of achievement for me that I was able to break that barrier that everyone over the past 2 years had been telling that, you know, until and unless you get a co-founder, you will never be able to raise. And that was a sweeping statement I was getting from everyone.
Let's get into Suresh's founder journey on this episode of Venturing Into Fashion Tech. How are you today, Suresh?
I'm doing great, Peter. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Looking forward to this conversation, especially about the Pakistani market, because we haven't yet had any guest speaker talking about this specific market and, of course, about resale in Pakistan as well. But before we get stuck into the conversation, I'm just going to provide a little bit of context for our listeners. So Suresh and Bisbee is a Pakistani startup dealing with the resale market and pre-loved fashion. Pakistan is actually the fourth most populated country in Asia with 220 million people. So it's a massive country. There's a lot of people there. Pakistan is the world's top importer of secondhand clothing, which I didn't know actually, but according to Statista, which amounted to $402.7 million US dollars in 2021. So again, it's a huge market. However, having said that though, Europe has the mega resale platforms like Vestiaire Collective and the USA has ThredUp. But in Pakistan, there is yet to be a dominant market player. This is where you can potentially then come in, Suresh, with Bisbee. And hopefully you do come in and fill that gap. But let's get stuck into the conversation. And I'm sure what I just introduced is going to feed into what we're going to talk about. But for you, Suresh, what was life like growing up in Pakistan, especially when it's a country that isn't known for entrepreneurship, nor does it have the same opportunities as the Southeast Asian region?
Agreed. So this is, since it's a two-part question, I will answer the first part of the question. I will address that first. So basically, I had a military dad, so I had a very sheltered environment growing up. We studied in the best of the best schools, so I was privileged in the regard that I was given the best possible exposure that could have been given to a child living in Pakistan or growing up in Pakistan. So in that way, I was privileged in terms of the kind of exposure that I received as a kid. And I had liberal parents, so they were my father especially was always very encouraging of me pursuing whatever I wanted to do. And then, so after I joined my university, that is when, which is back in 2011, in the third year of my university, is the first time that I heard of the word entrepreneurship. And that is when I kind of understood that what that really stood for. But at that point in time, so just I'm telling you the timelines because I want you guys to understand how new entrepreneurship is in Pakistan. So back in 2014 was the starting point of the concept of entrepreneurship in educational institutions, and students, you know, were starting to get encouraged to start their own businesses. But obviously, we were at a very nascent stage back then. So never in my wildest dreams at that point in time when I was studying that as a subject did I have in mind that I would become an entrepreneur myself. Given that, as you already highlighted, I didn't have any examples to see, you know, in my friend circle or in my family circle who I could look up to and say, okay, so they started their own business and they're really good at it. So, you know, I can do that too. Yes, in Pakistan, being the entrepreneurship particularly is still very young. But the flip side to that is that we are very lucky in the sense that we are in a market right now where all the other markets are now saturated. And now this is a market that's at its nascent stages. And is so there are so many gaps to be filled that any startup can disrupt industries within this country and serve to such a big audience, as you already said, that we have a huge population to cater to. So that Pakistan being the entrepreneurship coming a little late was also had its pros for us, that we are now we've learned what to do and what not to do from the startups in the West. And now we can take those learnings and we don't have to start from scratch. And we can take those learnings, tweak it, and then build industries in Pakistan, just as I did for Bisbee. The industry that I'm in right now, it was nowhere to be heard of 3-4 years ago. And we entered this industry, we faced the challenges, we understood the customer psyche, we tweaked, and then eventually we are now one of the players, hopefully one day one of the biggest players, but right now one of the first movers in this particular space, which we're very proud to say. For markets like Pakistan and developing countries, other developing countries in the world provide these opportunities that are sometimes not really, that people sometimes not tend to realize.
And it seems that you have embraced entrepreneurship, Suresh, quite well. I've known you now for over 3 years. We started working with each other in 2020. Time has flown by and it seems like you have actually just, you know, taken it to it, even though, as you said, you haven't necessarily had the exposure in the specific regions. Does that mean that you've just had to make loads of mistakes and learn along the way just to get it right?
So I was lucky in the sense that I could learn from other people's mistakes. So the first job that I had getting out of university, my first job was in a bank that I left after a week because it was too boring. Then my other job was in a software company, which I also left because it was too boring for me. My third job, which I really stuck to, was a startup. That was my first entrance into the entrepreneurship world and understanding how startups work and, you know, what works, what does not work. The first startup that I was part of, they failed after 6 months. They were doing great, but they failed after 6 months. So I learned a lot from just being with them and then seeing what mistakes they made. Then the other company that I became a part of was also a startup. And then I saw them grow their company, bootstrapped absolutely from 4 people to 200 people. So I then learned from them how they reinjected all of their earnings and how they slowly grew their company without any external investment into you know, such a big entity 4 or 5 years later. So just being a part of different entrepreneurs' journeys really helped me learn a lot. And so I had to make much less mistakes when I started my own entrepreneurship journey.
And was that in digital marketing, is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So how did you know when was the right moment for you to leave those specific opportunities and startups? And you were just like, okay, I have learned enough now from all of these different people around me. It's now time to do my own thing.
Yeah, so that was never a thought that came in my mind. I was very happy doing what I was doing because I love marketing. I love digital marketing. I was working with different clients. So, you know, there was a lot of newness that I got to deal with new customers, etc. So I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would start a business of my own, to be very honest. It's just the opportunity that came in front of me was so lucrative and it just made so much sense to me as a person that I desperately wanted to do something about it. And since no one else was willing to take up that challenge, I really wanted to take up that challenge. And I really wanted to, you know, show people that it is something that is logical and it can work out. Because anyone that I talked to at that point in time about the idea, everyone thought that it will not work out unanimously. Except for a few people in my life. It was not like an epiphany moment when I was like, you know, I'm now going to leave everything and I'm going to start something on my own. It was when the idea of Bisbee actually came in front of me, which was through basically a social media post that I saw of a girl who had put up her wedding dress for sale. And I started Googling on whether there was a platform where I could find pre-loved dresses in one e-commerce space, and to my surprise, there was none. So that idea kind of stuck to me. And since it was really close to me, how women, for women around me, clothes was a very important part of their lives, and it really made them happy. And so I thought that's such a smart idea that they can get, they can make money off of those clothes and, you know, actually celebrate their love of fashion without hoarding their closets. So when that idea came to me, that was when I decided that, okay, I now want to take up this as a challenge. And I want to make this a thing in Pakistan.
So it sounds like you just stumbled into fashion.
I did. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of Pakistan, just contextually for our listeners who are predominantly based in the West, what is the Pakistani fashion market scene like?
The fashion scene is very similar to how it is abroad. The one difference between, for example, if I had started my business in Pakistan or if I had started my business elsewhere, was the mindset. So in Pakistan, in the West, I recently had the privilege to travel in the past couple of years to the US and Europe. And so the mindset of people when it comes to secondhand fashion is absolutely different. Now, people in the West are actually pursuing or actually intentionally buying secondhand, you know, just to promote sustainability. But in Pakistan, there was a huge taboo that was linked with secondhand fashion. So for listeners who are not well aware of the Pakistani market, I feel like fashion is a very geographically fluid kind of a language. Fashion around the globe is the same. But when it came to secondhand fashion, it was, the mindset was much more different because people were much more conscious here when it came to wearing someone else's dress. And that was kind of my biggest challenge, kind of fighting through that mindset for people.
And now is pre-loved fashion still a taboo or has it moved on?
It has moved on for one generation. So for women who are below the age of 30 to 35, they are much more like millennials and Gen Z. They're much more willing to adapt secondhand fashion willingly. And that's because now these influencers are talking about it. These international celebrities are talking about it. The Kardashians have their own secondhand store. So because now these big names are associated with secondhand fashion, and our youth is highly influenced by the West and the media in the West. So now it's they feel like it's a cool thing to do. But if I go to the generation beyond that, to women who are older than that, it's a big no-no still for them.
Now, and for you, Sarish, was it a taboo to start off with, or have you always been the queen of resale?
I have never. Okay, so I hated shopping, particularly because it never made sense for me to spend so much on one piece of dress, right? So much money. I would never want to spend money. So I was the kind of a person who would re-wear clothes for ages until and unless they were too worn out to wear. But I was surrounded, like my mom would go shopping for me. And then when I got married, my mother-in-law would go out shopping for me because both of them were super into clothes. My best friend was super into clothes. So for them, it made sense for me that you have so many clothes. I would rather take your clothes for example, like a 70% less of a price. I'd be willing to pay that money rather than full price. So for people like me who do not want to spend money, it made a lot of sense. And for people like them who did not like re-wearing, the idea made a lot of sense. So no, I cannot say I was even into fashion before Bisbee. I've actually started buying more after I started Bisbee, which I feel goes against the values of my business. But I try to resell as soon as possible as well.
But at least you're still buying secondhand. Even if you are buying more, you're not buying new.
80% of my wardrobe now is Bisbee.
So then you mentioned right at the start how you had the idea for Bisbee come about. How has the platform evolved since that very first wedding dress situation scenario that you explained to us to the platform that we see now today?
Yeah, so that's an interesting story. And I'm very lucky that Beyond Firm has been with me in my transition from day one to where we are today. But just for everyone else, we basically started, our brand name was BizBride. So we started purely as a platform for bridals and party wear. where women could sell their bridals and party wear in Pakistan. But very quickly, when I came into the market and I started talking to customers, I realized that the demand actually mainly lied, as I said, among the younger audience. So it lied more with women who were university going, office going women. So they were looking for daily wear clothes. And so that's when we decided to kind of pivot our brand. Then we rebranded to our name to Bisbee, rebranded our entire branding strategy to a more youthful kind of a look, focusing more on the younger audiences. And also focusing more on other categories, so casual daily wear, Eastern wear, Western wear, etc. And that's kind of when the business really started picking up. We've been a very customer-driven brand, and our customers have always driven us in the right direction. So we've been very lucky in that regard as well.
I have been following your trajectory for quite a few years now, and you have grown really quickly. How many users do you have now on the platform, and how many garments? I can't remember the exact number now.
The last data that I checked, we now have above 45,000 users on the platform. Every month, we're getting 15 to 20,000 more dresses added into our inventory. Obviously, then it's in a loop because it keeps on selling as well.
Which is great, which goes back to my introduction, the fact that Pakistan is the largest importer of secondhand clothing. But in terms of the secondhand clothing that you service on the website, it's only from people in Pakistan, right? You don't actually import anything, do you?
Yeah, so that is another very big market, which you're talking about. Absolutely. So the import of secondhand clothes is a very big separate market in Pakistan. But what we're basically catering to is the secondhand that people are actually wearing. They're buying a new dress and then they wear it once and twice and they just want to give it out. So basically, focusing more on the concept of digitizing every household's wardrobe is our main focus, rather than importing clothes and then dissipating that in the market. So yeah, so that's kind of how we differentiate from that particular segment. Yes.
And in terms of the customers for Bisbee, you've said Gen Z, you've said the younger consumer, but in terms of like income levels, in terms of where they actually come from and their backgrounds, how does that play out, considering that, you know, more than a quarter of Pakistan's population is still in poverty? So how does that all play out?
Okay, very good question, actually. We surprisingly had expected, when we were starting off the business, we expected that a major chunk of our buyers would be lower middle class people. So people, for example, who are earning less than rupees 30,000 a month, which is like the bare minimum salary that you get in a month in Pakistan. And then, but surprisingly, a majority of our buyers and our sellers mainly lie in the upper and upper middle class, because these are women who have excess of clothes. And our main buyers are middle class women, because again, as I said, these are women who are working and university going. So obviously, if someone can afford to go to university or is working, they automatically are earning more. We had a different perception of what target market would be, but right now our buyers are mainly middle and upper middle, and our sellers are upper class and upper middle class users.
And what's it been like, you, Suresh, as an entrepreneur trying to crack this huge market? And 45,000 users is good, obviously, but you still have quite a few million others to capture still.
You know my journey. So the first year that we were in business, I remember we only had, I think, hardly 50, 60 users a maximum 100 by the end of the year. So this is like a huge deal for us, just to crack the code, to kind of magnify our growth over the past years. But yes, there's a long way to go. So my one thing that I always say is, for example, even if we can target 100,000 users, 100,000 wardrobes in Pakistan, and we can even get them to sell only 3 dresses, we can house the largest variety of pre-loved apparel in Pakistan. And again, that is just a tip of the iceberg. So when we look at our target market, even if I funnel them to the degree that I'm only targeting women who are in university going and in specific cities and living in urban areas, Even this number comes out to be a 20.5 million users. So yes, absolutely, we have a very long way to go. And fingers crossed, we will be the first to get there as well.
Absolutely. And even if you're not the first ones to get there, the market is so big that there can literally be several players on the market. I definitely do believe there's definitely enough space for more than one player.
We cannot cater to the entirety of the nation.
Exactly. There's just so much space.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, you've caught the attention of other countries. So, for example, Singapore, which you've been part of accelerator program there. Congratulations on that, first of all. How did that all come about? And how did you feel when you were accepted into that specific program?
That was a time in my journey when I was really down, because I was looking to raise investment, obviously, to amplify Bisbee's growth over last year. And then, so I had a two-pronged problem. I was a startup hailing from Pakistan. And then we all know the issues that were there in the Pakistani investment landscape over the past, in the past particular year. And other than that, I was a solo female founder. So both of these posed really big problems when I was talking to or reaching out to investors. So when I was accepted in Accelerating Asia, at that point in time, I became the second female founder in Pakistan to have, solo female founder in Pakistan to have raised money. And that in itself was such a big feeling of achievement for me, that I was able to break that barrier that everyone over the past 2 years had been telling that, you know, until and unless you get a co-founder, you will never be able to raise. And that was a sweeping statement I was getting from everyone. So it was such an amazing feeling of achievement when that happened. And that one step obviously opened up so many more gateways for us and for Bisbee in terms of opportunities. So I feel like that was the kind of fuel that we needed to really amplify Bisbee and get it to its true potential where I feel it should be.
Do you think you will ever move to Singapore, or do you think Pakistan is your home for now?
Please forgive me if, but out of all the places that I have traveled to in the past 2 years, I hands down loved Singapore. It is such a nice place. The people there are awesome. So maybe if ever in life I think of moving, I would move to Singapore, but not really. I really love my country, and I always feel that no matter how many months I have to spend in a certain place for work, I would always want to come back here.
So you've raised your pre-seed fundraising round. So congratulations on that. What is next for Bisbee? How do you see yourself growing as a business, but also as an entrepreneur?
With this investment, we are basically looking to expand into the Pakistani market only. And then we are 6 months down the line looking to open our round again. And that investment money would mainly be focused on expanding in a new geography. So we have a few geographies that we feel like have a high potential for a brand, for a business like Bisbee, namely Bangladesh. Then we're also looking near Singapore. You have the Philippines, who have a bigger working class. You have Malaysia. So these are a few geographies that we're looking at. So the next investment we'd be looking by the end of 2024 to enter into a new geography as well.
And how about yourself as a founder, as an entrepreneur, Suresh? What's next for you? How do you want to grow?
I am growing every day, actually, with Bisbee. Every day I question myself, and every day is a new challenge. And then obviously after raising investment, it's an absolutely different ballgame, because the kind of pressure that you're under now is so different, because there's someone else's money involved, right? So now you have the sense of responsibility that, okay, I do not have the room to mess up anymore. So you have that much more pressure on you. So it's been exciting. I'm pushing myself every day to grow myself as, for example, like I was never very fluent with operations. So I've learned how the exact operations of the company work, all of those issues I get resolved. So I've gotten really hands down with all of the departments so I can help optimize them. And I feel that would really help me scale Bisbee in the long term, because when the bases are strong, you can grow a building to however tall you want it to be. So I am pushing myself to learn things that I'm not comfortable with, especially numbers. one thing I always run away from. So yeah.
Yeah, and you're going to eventually be the resale queen of Southeast Asia. I'm going to brand you that now. Suresh. That's my new motto for you. Suresh is the resale queen there. So I just want to finish off this episode with a quick fire round of questions. The first answer that comes to your head. Suresh, mm-hmm. are you ready?
Yeah.
Your favorite pre-loved fashion item that you own?
What I'm wearing right now.
What is it?
This is my Zara shirt. This is my comfy shirt whenever I'm really in a hurry to come to the office. I bought this from Bisbee 2 years ago. I've worn it a gazillion times. I still love it. So it's a Zara shirt that I got from one of the sellers on Bisbee.
Next item in your closet that you want to sell?
Good question. I'm not a seller. I'm a buyer.
So you just buy things.
Right. And I wear them until they can't be worn anymore.
Yeah. Which is also good, you know, longevity in a product is also being sustainable.
Yeah.
Best way to shop sustainably?
Shop on Bisbee or similar platforms to Bisbee.
3 reasons to use Bisbee.
You can declutter your wardrobe. You can buy new clothes constantly without feeling guilty about it. And thirdly, you can actually feel good about being a responsible fashion consumer.
One piece of advice you would tell your younger self?
Good question. I feel the one piece of advice that I would give to myself was maybe I should have become, I should have started the journey earlier. I should have had a head start so I could be, I would be at a different stage by now. But, you know, there's a time for everything.
I know the feeling, Suresh, but you were pretty young when I first met you. So I wouldn't worry on that part.
But there are kids that are starting off now when they're like 16, 17. I feel like that's a good age. That is when you should start.
You're still young, Suresh. It's fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter. It was lovely talking to you.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to click follow to keep up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like this episode, please give us a review. If you want us to feature a specific theme or guest, please give us a message at beyondform.io. I will see you very soon.